Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Ali Moreno here with you in the studio. And a little later on, we'll be talking about Chelsea's game against Manchester City this weekend. But we will start in La Liga, where Cadiz and Barcelona played out a 0-0 draw. Nothing really to speak of in the first half, but in the second half, there was a controversial red card for Frankie de Jong. Memphis Depay had chances in the second half, one of them just wide right at the very end, but in the end, it finished goalless, and it's just a point for Barcelona. As we now welcome in Stevie Nicol, Jules Laron, and Ian Dark as well. And let's look back on everything we saw in this one. I will start with you, Ali. What was your main takeaway from it?
Well, much like the highlights, I'm just going to suggest that the first half, nonsense. Nothing. And I mean nothing from both of these teams, in particular Barcelona, because you expect them to be the team that actually carries the possession and creates the chances. But it looked like it was two mid-table teams just kind of struggling to get through a midweek game. Fractionally better at the start of the second half from Barcelona. We saw a lot better movement of the ball, a little quicker in the movement from the ball. But you just kind of see the lack of structural Barcelona when it's Luke de Jong crossing the ball to Memphis Depay, and that becomes your best chance prior to the red card. It just tells you it's all out of sync in the attack for Barcelona. It should be Luke de Jong inside the 18-yard box. It should be Memphis Depay providing the service or somebody else from a wider area. That's not quite happening for Barcelona. And yet, they had a chance to win this game. Carlos del Cerro Grande becomes a protagonist in the match because the referee gives a red card that I don't think should have been a red card. Two yellow cards are questionable at best in the decisions against Frankie de Jong. And from there, it was going to be difficult for Barcelona. But what I liked, actually, from Barcelona is the fact that a man down, they actually look potentially more dangerous. They got stretched. Yes, they were defending all over the place. Ter Stegen had to come up with saves. But then you all of a sudden saw runs coming out of the midfield, overlapping runs, combinations. Ricky Puig still part of this team. Ricky Puig makes an appearance and actually makes a difference in providing an outlet going forward and a little bit of different energy. So if you're Barcelona, you walk out of this disappointed because of the draw, because of the result, and because you need wins. But if you can take the last 20 minutes and then tell yourself, can we have that same dynamic movement in the attack? When we have 11 players on the field, maybe there is something to build on here.
Maybe.
Well, yes, it's a big maybe.
A big maybe. Jules, in the pre-match press conference from your man, Ronald Koeman, we were told to lower our expectations. What did you make of this pre-match press conference from him, reading out that statement and then leaving?
I just don't think any of it came as a surprise. I think it's exactly what we kind of expected from Barcelona, because as Ali just explained, there's no structure to their game. There's not much into their game. Yeah, the last 15 minutes, because the game got wilder and because Cadiz eventually starting attacking, there was more space than for Barcelona to counter-attack, even with 10 men, and that's when they created the chances. But when they had the ball at 11 against 11, they could not create hardly anything because, and we repeat the same thing again, but because they're not building on anything with Ronald Koeman, there's nothing, there's no patterns of play, there's no movement, there's not much in it. And I think it would be the same against Levante without Frankie de Jong, now who's going to be suspended, of course. So I think, again, we will see a very similar team and a very similar performance. It's a shame they could not get one of those chances in at the end, because I think a win, of course, would have been such a big breath of fresh air for them and the kind of boost that they need right now. But this is so disappointing again. It's another bad result.
Stevie, you and Jules were at loggerheads the other day over Ronald Koeman. What do you make of him after this performance?
Well, it's never good before a game when the manager is telling you not to expect too much. I mean, that is a slap in the face straight away. But the problem is that he's being honest. Now, whether you like him being honest or not, he's actually telling the truth. I mean, Barcelona on the field right now are carrying too many passengers. You know, Ter Stegen, Frankie de Jong and Depay is what this team is. The rest are passengers. You know, Sergiño Dest, for example, committed, yes, gave everything, yes, but he's not comfortable going forward on that side. On the other side, you've got two young guys, Mingez and Demir, absolutely zero from them. So, too many passengers, and quite frankly, he's right. Whether you like him to say it or not, Koeman is right. If you cannot beat two bang average teams in Granada and Cadiz back to back, then you're bang average yourself. So he's right, whether you like it or not.
Ian, Memphis Depay in the opening stages for Barcelona was looking electric. He came close today, but it's not quite happening for him, was it?
No, his form's tailed off. There were two golden chances I think he would have gobbled up earlier on in the campaign. But yeah, you're right. It's not happening for him. And this is a results business. And Ronald Koeman, who does look like a dead man walking in the job now, it looks like a question of when, not if, he's going to go, because it does seem like a toxic relationship with the president. I mean, he needed the win there tonight, but it never rains. It always pours, doesn't it? If things are going wrong, they go completely wrong. They might have gone on to win that game, might have, if Frankie de Jong had stayed on the pitch. Frankly, that was one of the most ludicrous second yellows I've ever seen. An absolutely inept decision, that. Koeman himself gets a red card at the end of the game as well. So Barcelona are creaking. I mean, Piqué said, didn't he, a few weeks ago, we're a little bit broken. I think they're a lot broken at the moment, but they do have Dembele to come back in. They have Ansu Fati, who's nearly ready to come back. He might even come back at the weekend. And they've got Pedri to come back in. So Stevie's right. There aren't too many stars at the moment, but they've got a few who could come back and make a difference. I still think they've got enough players there to have a tilt and having a run at La Liga. But, you know, 4 points dropped in two games against Granada and then Cardiff, that's not clever.
It was interesting looking at Ricky Pooja's reaction on the bench when it looked as though Ronald Koeman was just overlooking him in the first half.
So by the 32nd minute, and Ronald Koeman is walking down the bench, and Ricky Pooja is looking at him like, is he going to put me in? Is he? No. He tells Sergio Roberto, the guy who is being criticized by the media in Barcelona, by the fans in Barcelona, you go warm up. You're the one who's going to go resolve the problems out there. Look, whether it's Ricky Puig, whether it's Sergio Roberto, whether it's Gavi, Demir, whoever you want to bring into this team, there's still flaws. And there's still, when we talk about cracks for Barcelona, it's not that they're just broken from what we see right now. They're broken in the foundation of the team. And so right now, there isn't an easy solution, and it's not a change of manager that is going to resolve this. There's a whole change that needs to happen in terms of player personnel and, of course, the manager. Because if indeed you're going to have a guy who's dead man walking, look, then start the project. Figure out what is it that you want out of the future of this club and then start the project and get it going. If Koeman is not your guy, then move on from Koeman. But certainly what the players do not need and what the club does not need is for a manager to come on a press conference and say to the fans of this club, lower your expectations. It's not going to get any better anytime soon. Whether that's the truth or not, and I agree with Stevie, it may be the truth. And certainly from what we see in the evidence is the truth. But you don't come out and say that. You don't come out and admit to the world, you know what, we are terrible. Not the manager of a team. That's our job. See, us here on this side of the world, we'll say that they're terrible. But the manager within the boundaries of that club, within the locker room, cannot say, look, we're not good enough. Because you still got to go and face the players. And those are the same players that you're asking to perform for you on the field. That's not the way to go if you're a manager.
Ian, would a different manager make a difference with this Barcelona side? Or does it come down to the players that are available to them?
I think it comes down to the players available. I don't think there's any magic wand. They are going through a difficult period. They haven't got any money to go and buy the kind of players that usually would be attracted to Barcelona. They might even find it difficult to find a new manager or one that they wanted. Of course, Xabi would be, you know, a sentimental, romantic choice, but he has no experience of being a top European club manager. You could say Pep Guardiola didn't either, but he'd managed the B team for a while, and he had Lionel Messi and a few others around as well to help him get through the period. So I don't think that's the answer either. I'm not sure exactly how they can get out of it. I think they are just going to have to go through rough seas for a while and put up with it.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds. This whole team will be back with us for extra time, so make sure to subscribe to ESPN FC on YouTube to never miss an episode of Extra Time. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Chelsea against Manchester City. We've got that coming up this weekend. It will be at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea at top with 13 points from their first five games. City with 10 points from five. Ian Dark, this could be a good one, couldn't it?
It could, and of course, Chelsea have beaten Manchester City the last three times they've played them, and seem to have a little bit of a side over them. Thomas Tuchel has kind of outthought Pep Guardiola, so City have got a point to prove. They're coming off that 0-0 draw against Southampton, which was pretty uninspired. Chelsea were fantastic in the second half at Tottenham, not the first half, of course, but they look like champions-elect, don't they, at the moment? Liverpool do too, mind you. It's a great race, but I remember Manchester City coming to Stamford Bridge in the recent past with a point to prove last season and putting on a really big performance and winning the game and showing what they're about, and I just wonder whether this fixture will concentrate their minds quite wonderfully. So I'm intrigued to see what happens. But you would have to say, on form at the moment, Chelsea are favourites.
Will the fixture deliver, Stevie, for you?
I'm not so sure. You know, for me, the biggest difference in the size is going to be Lukaku. Chelsea's got a goal scorer and Manchester City don't, you know. I can see Chelsea sitting tight early on. I can see City coming forward. I'm trying to figure out where the goals are going to come from City, but then I can see Chelsea keeping City out and then breaking and then Lukaku scoring to put them ahead, and then they shut up shop. That's kind of what I see. I don't see a 4-3 or anything like that. I see this as Chelsea showing that they are a side, that they stick together whatever it is they do, and I see them keeping City out. So I can see a Chelsea win, but I don't see it being a classic.
Jules, you gave us a combined 11 for these two sides. Would you like to talk us through it?
Yes, definitely. Some positions were really hard. We decided to go for a 4-3-3 and not the back three that Chelsea are playing under Thomas Tuchel since he took over Frank Lampard in goal. That was maybe the toughest. I went for Ederson simply on experience because I think he's got far more than Mendy. Mendy has been amazing since he joined from Rennes, especially under Tuchel. Then the back four, Reece James at right back. I went with Cancelo at left back because I still think that Marcos Alonso is more of a wing back really than the left back. Ruben Dias and Thiago Silva. The Thiago Silva that we saw against Tottenham was just phenomenal at 37 years old. The three in midfield, Jorginho, of course, to dictate the play with N'Golo Kante and Kevin De Bruyne. I think on those three, we were pretty certain that you would go with those three. And then up front, Lukaku as a number nine, of course, because City don't have one. And then on the wings, I went with Mason Mount on one side and Phil Foden on the other side. Of course, you could have had a Kai Havertz if you want, Raheem Sterling, Riyad Mahrez, you know, whoever else you fancied, Bernardo Silva if you want. But I felt the Mount, Foden, Lukaku combination could be pretty, pretty lethal if they play together. So I think this is a pretty good-looking starting 11.
Jules, do you think there's a winner in this game at the weekend?
I don't. I think a draw everybody will be happy with. I think Chelsea will be cautious. I think, like they always are against City, I think City will be cautious to go away, to face Lukaku, not to expose themselves, because you know that Lukaku now can, if you play the high line, can take that space, which no one at Chelsea could really do last season, not because Werner doesn't have pace. He has a lot of pace, but doesn't know what to do with it. Now it's very different, so I can see a very cautious approach from both teams. I could easily see this one finishing 0-0, which would be a shame. I'll go for a 1-1 draw, but I really believe there will be a draw.
Ian, did you like Jules's combined 11?
I've got a bit of a feeling about Mason Mount at the moment that he's just not quite himself. He's had so many games, about 80 for club and country in the last year. And I just think he's, for him, slightly off it. And you could question Phil Foden because he's hardly had a kick so far this season because he's been recovering from injury. But you couldn't seriously argue with it. You might think about Rudiger at the back, the way he's been playing. But yeah, it's a pretty good combined 11. It's a pity we won't ever see it.
Can I just highlight something? Because I don't want the moment to pass without mentioning the fact that we know from the past that Stevie Nicol doesn't feel very strongly about Romelu Lukaku, right? And yet, the first thing that he said in differentiating this teams, Manchester City and Chelsea, was indeed Lukaku! Lukaku! That's the name he brought up. So, write it down. This is a moment in which Stevie Nicol admits the greatness of Romelu Lukaku.
Stevie?
The proof is in the pudding, as they say. And yes, I do believe that Lukaku will be. I think he's shown so far this season that he's a man now. I always felt that one of his problems was that he didn't realise how good he could be. I think he understands now that he's the man. You know, he's demanding the ball now. When he was at Manchester United, he was quite happy to be told to go and stand wide. He'd be like, yes, how far away do you want me to stand and how long do you want me to stand there? Now he's dominating. He's actually telling people he wants the ball. This is where I'm going to be. This is where I need the ball. So he's, to me, he's turned into a man from just a big boy.
All right. Yeah, things are changing for Stevie Nicol.
I mean, it sounded like a compliment, but not fully quite committed. That's all right. He's coming around.
He is coming around. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow.
And continue
talking about the big games in the Premier League this weekend and much more because ESPN FC is available daily.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now we have a bit of drama to tell you about.
No, really?
A bit of drama in France, and it was the game between Metz and PSG where Mbappe was criticised by Frédéric Antonetti, the Metz manager. He actually tried to chip the ball into the Metz goal instead of giving it back to the Metz player when there was an injury here. Our opposition manager not happy about this. And then there is going to be a winning goal for PSG, who won 2-1 on the night. It was a brace from Ashraf Hakimi. And Mbappe angered a few others after this. So this was the comment. Kylian Mbappe had better behave differently if he wants to be loved.
Oh, okay.
I adore this player. He's very, very strong, but he would benefit from showing more humble behaviour. In the game, he had been non-existent. It happens when he cannot find space. So it sounds here, Jules, that he's a fan of the player, but not a fan of his antics in this game. What did you make of them?
Yeah, that's right, Ken. We've mentioned enough on the show, and Craig, you know, Craig not so long ago was pretty much saying the same things about Kylian and his behaviour on the pitch, more than off the pitch, but certainly on the pitch. And we saw that against Metz. We saw the good side of him as a player. I mean, he could have had a hat-trick easily. It was an off night in terms of his finishing and being clinical. But I don't think he was terrible apart from that. But more importantly, maybe, I guess, and to go back to the comments by Antonetti, it was the attitude. We saw him trolling the defenders, the Mets defenders. We saw him trolling Ukidja, the goalkeeper, after the Ashraf Hakimi winning goal in the 95th minute, you know, going and clearly shouting something at him, which angered him. Then Ukidja went to confront Mbappe, who was sort of hiding behind all the PSG huddle, if you want. Neymar ended up pushing the goalkeeper to tell him to go away. So this is not good, and it's not the first time. And we go back again to where is this 16, 17-year-old that we saw at Monaco bursting onto the scene, this prodigy, because this is what he is and this is what he was, with all that sort of innocence. And now, only, what, 3 years later, 4 years later, he's become clearly a very different player. Some said really big-headed, others says that he doesn't respect the game the way he should. Antonetti clearly is thinking that he's not humble enough and that there's that sort of big-headed personality that is there and that is to the detriment of the player that he is and certainly to French football. So it's not the first time, and I fear that it won't be the last time that we will talk about that side of his game, unfortunately.
Is this a problem for you, Stevie?
Yeah, it's nothing new. We have spoken about it before, and I think what Mbappe doesn't realise is that part of what goes with being a great player is having the respect of all your peers. And when you lose that, you don't get it back. And when you lose that, then people start kicking you. Then they start winding you up. So it's a big part of the game. It's one thing to be a great player, but it's just as important that your peers respect you. And right now, the way he's going about it, his peers are losing respect for this guy very, very quickly.
Ali?
I can't believe for the life of me that he's trying to chip the goalkeeper. Maybe it's a mishit. Maybe I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now, that doesn't mean that he has been immature at times and big-headed and hasn't shown humble behavior and all that. But in this particular instance, I cannot believe for the life of me that he's trying to do this. And if he is, then not only do the other players from other teams should get his attention, players within his team should get his attention. And that, to me, is the biggest issue here. Because who is that player that is going to get in his face from PSG and say, Kylian, this is unacceptable. We can't have this. You're too good of a player to be doing this sort of stuff and to be behaving like that. Who's going to tell him that when Neymar also does this sort of stuff? And he's the other superstar. So where is that leadership going to come from? And to me, that's the part in which PSG, if they're not going to achieve the things that they want to achieve this season, they're going to be their own worst enemy. These are the sort of things that you have to manage in-house. And if indeed he meant to do it, and if indeed he meant to chip the goalkeeper, then you go to Kylian and say, you know what, this is unacceptable. This will not fly.
Is there a concern at PSG, Jules, about Mbappé?
Not that I was told of. It certainly doesn't feel like this. Pochettino didn't really talk about it after the game yesterday either, or in the past even. I think they've seen the attitude. They're aware of what's going on with him and the way maybe he's changed a little bit, because he's got also bigger and bigger and bigger as a player worldwide. I mean, in terms of, you know, of being famous and all of that. But I think concern is maybe too strong. But I agree with Ali and Stevie. I think this is something that they will have to monitor, and that maybe Sergio Ramos, Lionel Messi, whoever feels comfortable, Marquinhos, the captain, Pochettino himself, Leonardo, the sporting director, I don't know, someone maybe needs to have a word. I'm not sure where you go from there. Let's see maybe this season how he behaves. But if we see more of what we saw at Metz, for example, and we saw it a little bit before too, this season, I mean, then maybe that will become a concern.
Stevie, you wanted to add something?
I remember the conversations we had when we were talking about what effect Ramos and Messi would have on this team. And one of the big things that certainly I thought would be to get Neymar back in line and to get Mbappe back in line, because he was beginning to look as though he was getting a little bit big for his boots. And then we were talking about, well, why wouldn't he be? Because the guy he's looking up to is Neymar, and so if Neymar's acting like a fool, then he's going to do the same thing. So we did have the conversation. We thought that Ramos and Messi, particularly Messi, coming into PSG, he would be the guy that would sort out any of that sort of nonsense. Because if there's one guy that goes about it properly, it's him. Now, maybe it's a little bit too early for Messi to turn round and just pull Mbappe and see how you get a hold of yourself, or the same with Neymar. Maybe it's a little bit early. He hasn't quite settled in there yet. But certainly, if it's going to happen, then it's going to have to come from, I think, Messi.
Well, Neymar's concerns lie elsewhere at the moment. In fact, he said there's no more Drogba Benito because after Lucas Paquetá was given a yellow card for a rainbow flick in a Lyon's 3-1 win over Troyes in stoppages, the referee booked him.
What?
Yep. Neymar took to Instagram to criticise the decision and said the beautiful game is over.
I cannot believe that I'm about to say this. Well,
here we go. A yellow card for a dribble is very, very sad. The same thing happened to me last season. Honestly, I don't understand the reasons. Drogba Benito is over. Enjoy it while it lasts. Okay. Go on, Ale.
Neymar, please listen to me carefully because this doesn't happen often. I agree with you. I agree with you, Neymar. Look, I believe in a different type of justice, right? So, if the players from the opposing team do not like it, then take it upon yourself to show that to Lucas Paquetá in the way and in the manner in which you think he deserves. But for the referee to be given a yellow card because he's trying something fancy in a game, come on. Honestly, you talk about doing too much. This is not the role of the referee. Look, he's trying to do something that, yes, is fancy. Yes, they're winning the game 3-1. Maybe he's showing off. Okay, if you think he's showing off, then kick him. Catch him. Kick him. Go ahead. If you are insulted by this and you're an opposing player, then you have my blessings to, again, carry out a different type of justice. But the referee should not get involved in this.
Well, this is all about interpretation, Stevie, because it doesn't actually exist in the laws of the game in France. The referee can give a yellow, though, if they think the player is mocking an opponent. What do you make of moments like this?
Absolute nonsense. Ali's right. Listen, the retribution should come from either the player who's getting mocked or one of his teammates backing them up. And again, who's the referee to decide whether a player is actually doing this to mock the player or just to show how good he is and try and get away? So the referee knows nothing about that. He knows about rules and regulations and linesmen and all that other nonsense, yes, but he doesn't know what's going on in a game as far as what's in the players' minds because he's never done it, certainly at that sort of level. So 100% with Ali, he should keep his nose out of it, and the retribution should absolutely swiftly come from those on the field.
The thing is, though, is that Neymar has previous of himself doing something like this and being punished for it. It happened in a 5-0 win over Montpellier, and this is this. So Neymar is a little bit upset because he himself had been in trouble for something like this.
There you go. Okay. All right. Fine. And once again, I'll tell you the same thing. It's not the role of the referee to mandate this or to manage this. Leave it up to the players. I can guarantee you that the players can levy the right kind of justice on Neymar if they think he deserves whatever sort of treatment. And then you deal with that as a referee. But you let it play. You let it play out and you say, oh, Neymar, you're going to get fancy? Let's see what happens. And then after that, you take care of the consequences. Until then, do not get involved.
Jules, do the people of France agree with the panel or are they on the side of the referee?
No, it's a debate. So, in fairness to Stéphanie Frappard, the referee, the yellow card is not for the rainbow flick. The yellow card is that she tells Paquetá, don't wind them up. And Paquetá responds in a very rude way to what she said. The yellow card happened 30 seconds after the rainbow flick. So she didn't book him for the rainbow flick. She booked him for his reaction after she says to him, this is not needed because I'm not sure exactly what she said, but clearly her words to him were something like, don't wind them up, don't showboat like that because this could get out of hands or something like that. And clearly the way he responded, she didn't like, and she took the... In the end, it's the same thing, because I agree with the boys, she shouldn't be telling Paqueta, hey, this is the way you should be playing football. This is not her role, she's not there for that. You can understand that she doesn't want her game to descend into like an MMA fight, and I get that, because maybe she thought, hang on, if the trois defenders then start kicking Paqueta, and then the Lyon players start kicking the trois defenders, and then the trois players, and then you end up with a boxing match, and this is not what she wants. However, I find it really dangerous that she was allowed, able, whatever the word, to give him a yellow because he clearly said, I disagree with you, you should let me play football, and if I want to do a rainbow flick, a nutmeg, a sombrero, whatever kind of skill, which is to dribble past an opponent, is not just to showboat, is to be useful in the game, I should do it, I should do what I want. And that's where the issue is and where the debate is in France right now.
Okay, there'll probably be no debate from...
Again, it's not...
Go on, Stevie.
No, this is where the coach comes into it, and this is where his teammates come into it. You know, I did a similar thing with Clint Dempsey. Clint was way ahead of the people he was playing against, and so when he was doing things like that in the middle of the park, I would say to him after the game, right, here's the deal. Just remember, when you're doing that, the only thing you know is that as soon as possible, somebody's going to rattle you. Now, you might be lucky and it might not hurt, or you might just get a little bruise, but you might actually get injured badly. So if you're going to be doing this stuff, you do it in the penalty box where you try to score a goal. And it's the same for the players. Because if I'm a teammate of Paqueta, I'm saying, right, by the way, you've just wound every single one of them up. If all things being equal, you're the one that gets it, but you're going to get me kicked because you decided to mock the opposition. So it's not to do with the referee, but it's certainly got to do with the player. It's got to do with his teammates and his coach.
Oh, well, let's take a look at another moment. This is Nemanja Matic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a knee.
Oh, knee batch.
A knee and, shall we say, the crown jewels.
What?
Like
yes.
Fall here. I mean, yes. He did get...
A sensitive area.
A very sensitive area. Ian, Dark, what did you make of this?
Well, I think he's lucky to get away with it. I think he will get away with it. But I think he knows what he's doing there. And he's definitely left a mark on the other player. Now, in the past, they would go to the retrospective look at that, and he may get a charge of misconduct or dangerous play and a retrospective ban. But I think he's probably going to be given the benefit of the doubt. But if you're asking me, did he mean that? As a stray knee, I think he probably did. But I'd be interested to hear the views of the ex-professional players here.
100% knee bash to a sensitive 100%. Area. Are you kidding me? There's no doubt that he means to do it. There was a thought process. There was enough time for him to think about it. And he goes, yep, have some of this, deal with that. No doubt in my mind that this was on purpose and that he meant exactly what he tried to do there. And, by the way, this is right in front of the fourth official, who I do not understand how he does not see it. Clearly, from his angle, he should be seeing this. Apparently not.
Stevie, we were just talking on a show the other day about when you players have a little black book for the next time you meet that player. You'd imagine that this will be one of those occasions.
Oh, well, I think I'm pretty certain that's what you saw. There's no question. Matic went to do the guy, and he ended up doing him in the fashion he did. It's 100% a red card. Listen, if you did that in the pub on a Saturday night, there'd be a mass brawl. So, 100%.
Nice stuff. Nice stuff from you guys. Uh-huh. Not to watch what just happened.
Okay.
But yeah. YouTube.
No.
YouTube is where you need to go to see more of the content that we have for offer for you. ESPN FC is what you should subscribe to, and you'll see all these chats and more over there.
It's uncomfortable to watch, by the way.
Uncomfortable to watch.
Yes.
Yeah, and more. Uh-huh. All right. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Serie A action on Thursday, and Napoli maintain their perfect start to the season with a 4-0 win over Sampdoria. At the death, Ciro Immobile with a penalty earned a point for Lazio, and Tammy Abraham with the only goal of the game got Roma back to winning ways. And here's how the top of the table looks. Napoli with a perfect start, Inter just behind them, Milan in third, and Roma in at fourth right now. Jules, it's all looking good so far, and a big nod to Spalletti with Napoli.
Yeah, I have to say they were fantastic again today against Sampdoria. Like, they've been pretty much all this season, and when you see Victor Osimhen playing the way he does and the two goals that he scored tonight, the complete striker that he is quickly becoming compared to the one that I saw at Lille and that we saw emerging in Belgium the year before that, who was very good to run in behind and make really good runs. But now he can do so much more than just that. And it's fantastic the work that both Gattuso last season in what was an up and down season for Osimhen, and then Spalletti so far this season have done with him. It's great when you add Insigne and Zielinski in the form that they are, when you think that Dries Mertens hasn't even played yet this season. Koulibaly and Gisa, who's been a very, very shrewd signing from Fulham. This is a really good team. And I think it might not be sustainable, as in terms of winning. They're not going to win every single game this season in Serie A. However, I think you already know that you have to count on them for this title race because they're going to be so difficult to beat.
One man who's really proving to be worth his weight in gold is Tammy Abraham at Roma. What a start it's been for him, Jules.
Yeah, great goal. I mean, the finish, he's in the right position on the Calafiori cross. It's his third goal in all competition, the second in Serie A. It's not just that, though. It's the way he presses, the way he runs, all that extra effort, the motivation. Roma were not great tonight, let's put it that way. Udinese had a few chances. They lost Pellegrini as well, who was sent off right at the end, which they will miss for the game at the weekend. But still, they still win and they move on. And we saw Mourinho really agitated on the touchline, and I think he had to be. But Tammy is improving, and you can see this is a very special experience, I think, for a young English striker to go abroad in a very different league, very different country, not speaking the language. And yet the way he's integrated, the way he's settled in so quickly, I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. And you can see him learning so much and improving so much from this kind of experience.
Now, you can hear more from Jules on the Gab and Jules podcast. A new episode has actually dropped today, so make sure that you go and download it. All right. Well, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. But stick around. We do have extra time coming up for you with the whole crew that are here tonight.
So we don't get to go home?
No, not just yet. Not just yet.
All right.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have quite a lot of us here tonight for this one. We've got Ali Moreno, Stevie Nichols, Jules Laron, and Ian Dark. And we have questions for all of you. And let's see, I'll start this one with you, Jules. Who would win if Barca, Juve, Arsenal would play against one another based on current form? Rank the order in which they would finish. So let's say this is a little mini tournament, right, between these three, and they all play each other.
Wow.
I think in terms of football played, it would be a delight. No, I'm kidding. who would win? It's a tough one, that one. I would say Juventus, probably, just about, maybe. I mean, winning as in being the best of the worst, you know, or at least not as worst as the others. Maybe Juventus. I'm just like a moment of magic by Dybala, and they win 1-0 and 1-0 again, and this is it, we go home.
He's been hanging out with Gab way too much.
He just didn't want to say that Arsenal finished last, right?
Look, Juventus were holding hands with Salernitana last week.
And have just got to win.
I mean, honestly.
Right. Okay, so, yeah. Jill's being kind and diplomatic there. All right.
It's a tough question.
It is a tough question from Roy. It's a good question. Jamie Tart, obviously a Ted Lasso fan. For the next one, Stevie, yesterday Ivan Perisic was spotted watching the Milan versus Venezia game at the San Siro. Did Stevie ever go and watch any Everton games on his day off?
Do you know what? I actually went. I took my then girlfriend, who had just moved down from Scotland, when I went to Liverpool. Yeah. And had nothing to do, and so we went to an Everton game and actually stood in the crowd. That's the only time, but I did actually do it, yeah.
Was that your usual choice of dates, Stevie? Would that usually be a first date or a date at any time?
As you know, I'm a complete and utter romantic. I thought, I'll really spoil her. I'll take her to Goodison.
Were you trying to tell us something, Stevie?
I did it once. Just the once.
Just the once.
But she married you. She
you
married you, right, Stevie?
Well, sure, she could have been that disappointed. Eh?
Yeah. See, there you go.
She could have got the first train back to Scotland, but she didn't.
Actually Stevie's now wife.
Correct. You know.
I didn't read it that way, Correct. Stevie. I thought you were just being polite.
It's a questionable decision by her, but...
Yeah, you're very lucky, Stevie. Very lucky. Maybe she's secretly an Everton fan.
I know I'm lucky. I know exactly where my bread's buttered.
Literally where his bread is buttered, right next to his shepherd's pie. All right,
Correct.
Ian, from what you've seen so far in La Liga, are Real Madrid the clear favourites to win the league this year?
No, I wouldn't say they are. I think you have to think that Atletico are going to go close again. That's a tight-knit squad. They look to have the best defence to me, but Real are on a bit of a run at the moment, and particularly Benzema, who I think has 8 goals and 7 assists. I think he's been involved in 68% or something like that of Real Madrid's goals. So he's flying. They'll certainly be in contention for sure.
What about you, Ali? From what you've seen so far, you don't think Real Madrid are favourites?
Yes, they are favourites, from what I've seen so far. Now, coming into the season, I would have said Atletico Madrid because I thought that they had the least amount of questions from all of these teams. But Real Madrid has answered some of those questions, certainly offensively. Their big question, of course, is defensively. They have issues there. But we've also seen from Atletico Madrid the fact that they're having problems creating opportunities, scoring goals, defending. They're allowing a bunch of goals as well. Atletico Madrid has had difficulties, and yet they're getting results. That's what keeps them in the race.
Jules, you don't need to be polite on the answer to this one. Are Real Madrid clear favourites to win the league this year?
They are, because they've got Kareem the Dream. And with Kareem the Dream, anything is possible.
Where's Kareem Benzema from?
Oh, what? That would be France.
Oh, yes. Okay. All right. All right. Stevie, what kinds of punishment did you hand out to players for any insubordination during training sessions or any other situation where the team was together?
I once suspended one of the players for a week, told him to go home and think about his actions. I won't tell you who that was, but there was some blood involved, put it that way. So the player was told to go home and come back in a week.
It wasn't for running out of gas on the way to training, though, right?
No.
It was not, no.
All right. I can't imagine. Yeah, it must have been
That's
bad
all
for Stevie
you.
To say that. It must have been bad.
Yeah. I tell you, you speak to players that play for Stevie, and they love the man. They love playing for Stevie.
I've heard the same.
I would have loved to have played for Stevie. Let me tell you something. I would have scored goals for Stevie. He doesn't even know. I would have drawn fouls for him. It would have been great.
My favorite one, and I won't make you tell it, Stevie, is how you introduce yourself to the players by drawing a picture of yourself. That was my favorite story. And asking players to do the same.
That's guests at the hotel.
Oh, that was guests at the hotel. We won't go into it. All right, for Ian Dark, which sport do you prefer more, cricket or boxing?
Cricket or boxing? Well, I played cricket most of my life, badly. Golf is probably the answer to that. I like covering big fights. I used to cover some big fights when Mike Tyson was around and Sugar Ray Leonard and people like that and Marvin Hagler. So a big fight night is something special. But I've loved cricket all my life, so can I say both?
I think you can. It sounds like the person who asked that question knows Ian Dark well. Mm. I'll stick with you, Ian, because I'm going to ask everybody this last one. Have you ever been starstruck, either on the pitch during the game or while interviewing someone? And did you make a fool of yourself?
probably more than once. But I remember covering a USA-Argentina game at the Giant Stadium, I think it was, and Argentina were training on the pitch on the night before the game, and I was right near to Lionel Messi, and I was very anxious that a stray ball would come near me and I could pass the ball to Lionel Messi. Well, the stray ball did come near me, and I did try to play the pass, but not accurately, and I got a very withering look from him.
Oh, no! Is that one? If you could have the moment back, what would you do, Ian?
Oh, I think I'd have trapped it and juggled it a couple of times and given him a nice little cushion volley, and he'd have given me a little clap in return. But I don't think that was ever going to happen, was it? So I was in a kind of fantasy land there for sure.
Yeah, obviously. Jules, what about you? Have you ever been starstruck?
Oh, starstruck. It's easy for me, Diego Maradona, when he was the Argentina head coach, when they played in Marseille against France in a friendly. And I spent a few days covering the game and following them before the game, and it was just extraordinary in all sense of the word. So really the only time more than Zidane or, you know, all the others of my generation, certainly, but Diego was, it was something else. So starstruck all through the week. I was just like in absolutely awe of the guy.
Stevie?
Muhammad Ali came into our dressing room. We were playing, of all places, Birmingham City away. And he came into our dressing room before the game, and I was absolutely starstruck. I mean, I grew up watching him, obviously, on the TV fighting, and he was always on. There was a programme called Parkinson where he used to interview people, and he always had Muhammad Ali on. So Muhammad Ali was loved by everybody in Britain, basically. So when he came in the dressing room, I didn't get a chance to talk to him anyway, but I wouldn't know what to have said. I was absolutely starstruck.
What about you, LA?
Well, on the field, the first time that the Venezuela happened to play against Brazil. Now, I was, when I say play, I was comfortably sitting on the bench, so I had a really good look at what was going on the field. and when the teams lined up and I saw Brazil, and I saw original Ronaldo, Fenomeno, and Ronaldinho, and Roberto Carlos, and Cafu. And I'm thinking, we have no chance, man. We have no chance. We have zero chance. But seeing Ronaldo, and I didn't realize how big of a man he is, or he was, in terms of how tall, how strong, and how wide. And then you see him out on the field playing, and you're like,
he's
man.
White, no.
Well, yeah. A different type of wide. And then to see him live, it was, you know, that's a player that you sort of wanted to be like as a striker, right? And it was amazing. Now, in terms of as a coach, Maradona was the coach of Argentina. His first official match was against Venezuela in a World Cup qualifier in Buenos Aires. All of a sudden, I'm running down the sidelines, probably chasing somebody because we had no chance. We were not keeping the ball whatsoever. These guys were just keeping possession of the ball, and we were just running around chasing. Ball goes out of bounds, and there goes Maradona and hands me the ball. And I'm like, well, that's Maradona handing me the ball. I'm in the middle of a game, but I'm thinking, that was pretty cool. Because obviously, as Jules just said, for our generation, Maradona was the point of reference.
Yeah, and you didn't do with the ball what Ian did with the ball with Lionel Messi.
Oh, no, no, he was a little bit more skilled than Ian, just a tiny bit.
All right, just quickly, I'm going to go around, and I think I've already had one from you, Jules, but I just want your actual score predictions for Chelsea against Man City at the weekend. So I'll start with you, Ian.
I'll go Chelsea 2-1.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
What's
for
that?
The Ryder Cup, seeing as though we brought golf.
Oh, the Ryder.
But I will start with you, Ian.
Well, I've got to say Europe, haven't I? Because I think Europe boys, I think the US have got the better world-ranked players, but there's something about the spirit Europe always bring, and I think that course, from what I'm hearing, might suit the Europeans a little bit more. It's a thinking man's kind of court. So I'll say Europe by a point.
Nice. Obviously, there's much more excitement for the Ryder Cup than there is for Chelsea against Man City. What about you, Jules?
So I agree with Ian in terms of I think the course will favour us a bit more. It's really windy. It's like playing at Carnoustie and that kind of stuff. But I do think that the US are too good, and I think they're too good, and I think they would have learned the lesson from what happened in Paris 3 years ago in terms of team unity, team spirit. And I do think that, unfortunately, as much as I would love Europe to win, I think this one would go to the US.
Whoa, Stevie?
Well, I'm going to have to say the US, because the fact that there's no fans allowed from Europe is going to hurt the Europeans. And can you imagine, you know, we played games, we played football matches in stadiums where there was nobody, but can you imagine how unfair it would be if they played games and it was just the home fans? I mean, that's a huge advantage, because there's nothing between the teams. You could come up with reasons for both sides, but I'm going to go USA because they're going to have all the support, and the Europeans are going to have, well, just little pockets if they're lucky.
Yeah, it's a double bluff from Stevie.
Yeah, no, I'm wondering if you can balance it out.
That's the old double bluff from Stevie.
What do you say?
I hope it is, but
I'm going to say USA, and even though they're talking about the win on the course and how that could favor the Europeans, actually, I saw a graphic yesterday, last night, while I was preparing for the Ryder Cup, in which the American players have actually fared better in the win than the European players. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what they were discussing yesterday. And Colin Morikawa will be the start of this Ryder Cup. Oh. He will be the best player for the United States of America.
Ali gave us even more than just a prediction of who's gonna win it. Anyway, that's it for the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you so much for being with us. Make sure you join us every single day. We're here 7 days a week on ESPN FC. See you tomorrow.